It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. We are back once again with another episode of the Coming Out Lounge, and I can't wait to help you step out, step up, step in to being truly who you are. And today we're going to do a little bit of permission granting in our conversation today. You know, there's a song lyric that says, "A kiss is just a kiss." But I want to challenge that by saying, how true is it? What if that kiss is unwanted? Suddenly, if that's what you're feeling and experiencing, you're going to have that sense of danger and that sense of helplessness, and things could quickly go awry. And they can quickly go awry much the same way when you're coming out of the closet, because you feel helpless and you feel in danger about your own coming out journey. Yet, when we muster up the courage to say, nope, you can't treat me that way, you've got to ask permission to do things, we become completely empowered. And that's the shift of becoming, you know, who you're meant to be, the one in control versus feeling like you're the victim. And on the other side of that coin, when you ask permission to be with someone in a certain manner, you then show that you have respect and that you respect consent. And that's why I'm bringing one of the leading experts of building sexual consent and respect into our culture. His name is Mike Dimitris. And I want him to come on today and just talk about why this has become so important. Now, Mike and I met a few months ago back at the National Speakers Association conference, and he is a guy that goes all over the place on colleges, university campuses, in the military, talking about this consent and respect-based sexual culture. And I thought, you know what? What a great topic to bring into the Coming Out Lounge. So from dating and sexual decision-making to the joys of talking about, you know, communication and body language, we're going to kind of come out of the closet today and start asking permission before we steal unwanted kisses and affections and things away from other people. And he's also got a really great book out that we're going to be talking about. And so I want to bring my friend Mike onto the podcast. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Rick, for having me.
Hey, man, I've been looking forward to this one. And man, when we met, you know, we had brief encounters there at NSA. And then I was like, you know, I really like what this guy's up to. And then I've reached out to you a couple of times and you've been just a super help to me. And I thought, you know what, it's time to repay the favor and expose him to some more people on the globe that may have never even heard of him. Just really excited to have you here today, man.
Well, thank you. It's an absolute honor. I appreciate all those kind words. I felt a connection too. That, you know, when you feel that somebody's in alignment with a similar energy. And I got that vibe when we met right away.
Yeah, yeah. So let's kind of jump right in. So I know you do a lot of these talks around, you know, this consent and permission and respect and all this stuff. And your new book, Can I Kiss You, is something you take to a lot of university and college campuses. But I want to make sure that people don't tune out right now and go, oh, this is going to be about college kids, because these are universal truths, right? These are things you can take to the masses.
Well, yes, and proof of that is that a lot of the work we do with the U.S. military, the average age of the person in the room is 45 to 55 when we're talking to older groups in the U.S. military, leadership level. So this applies across the board. And what's interesting is that when you're having that conversation with the 55-year-old person who's been in a long-term relationship or the single one, they're having the exact same reactions that the 18-year-old's having. So this is incredibly universal across age, socioeconomic, all demographics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people go, well, you know, the coming out journey, it's different for different people. Absolutely. But at the core, when you're coming out, you're coming out. And it doesn't matter if you're 14, you're 18, you're 50, you're 60, whatever it is, there's going to be some commonality. And this is why I thought this would be a really great subject to bring to this podcast, because I think each and every one of us sometimes thinks, oh, it's just unique to us, when in reality, whether you're trying to protect yourself from sexual predators or, you know, date in the right ways or come out of the closet, there's some universal truths that we all encounter in these journeys. So why don't we start with, you know, what is the core reason that Mike does this work? What's behind it for you, man?
The core reason it began, where it all started from, I was a college student, and I received a phone call that my sister, who was 4 years older than me, had been raped. And I was devastated. I was filled with anger, rage, frustration, guilt that I didn't somehow stop this. Even I wasn't even anywhere near the state that I should have somehow protected this person that I love so dearly. And it went from a place of all this anger to I heard a speaker within about a year, and I said, hey, I could do something with this energy, try to do something positive. And I looked in the mirror and went, hey, I'm in college. Do I ask or do I assume what my partner wants? So I started asking my friends, do you ask? And they're like, no, nobody asks. And I started asking people, are you ever asked? They're like, no, people just do that to you. It's what they do. You stop them. And I'm going, oh my gosh, we've all been taught this incredibly messed up system. And ironically, not intentionally, like nobody's out there teaching us the rules, but we keep spreading the same horrible system to each other through conversation, media, entertainment, friendships. And that's when the light bulb went off and said, hey, we got to change the paradigm here. We have to shift it completely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like this piece that, you know, you bring up that nobody's really teaching us this stuff, you know. Nobody teaches us any of this stuff, really. It's just kind of evolved as humans. And it's like, okay, we see somebody else doing this, so we think it's okay. And then I'm projecting forward, which I'm sure this is where you go too, is if we continue this kind of behavior, are we really surprised that there's so many screwed up relationships in the world? We don't go and ask things of our partners even as we step into marriages, and you know, then we go through divorces and then we remarry, or maybe we finally don't do anything. This all starts when we start to ask permission for many, many things.
When I'm with military leadership, I'll start by asking them, hey, you've got a new Marine, sailor, or soldier, or Air Force individual that is just starting, and they're about to have a job that is life or death is on the line. Mm-hmm. Truly life or death. How many times are you going to give them training on that skill set? And they'll say, oh my gosh, so many times that when they get in this situation, they won't have to think. And I can start saying, oh, you mean muscle, and the whole room can yell memory. They know that's how you train. Mm-hmm. You give so much information that it's natural. And I say, great, that's a life or death situation. What have you done for that same individual for sexual decision making? Mm-hmm. And the room goes dead quiet. And I go, now, are you surprised? Sexual decision making, which can have a life or death element to it. Are you surprised we have all the problems we have when you give them all the training for the job, but we give them no life skills training on a situation that can be highly dangerous, life-threatening, severe consequences, and we give them no training?
Amazing. So when you say use the terminology, and I know it because you and I have talked and I read your book and stuff like that, but when you talk about sexual decision making, let's break it down to some of the barest elements of what that means to the common person.
So it can be everything from sexual contact of an intimate kiss to sexual intercourse to various forms of sex. Really depends on what somebody is seeking at that moment, what their partner wants, what they want. And a key element here that I'm going to ask everyone to think about is, you brought up the word permission, which for years is what we taught, that make it be permission-based. Well, we've shifted that recently. And when I wrote my first book, I used the word permission. When we wrote the latest book, we did not, because we had stopped using that maybe 6 or more years ago, and here's why. You can get someone's permission to do something they don't want to do. Hmm. So permission is not what we want in sex.
Right.
What we want in sex is we want mutually wanted, enthusiastically given. Hmm. That's a whole different ballgame, right? That's enthusiastically given. It's mutually wanted agreement. That's different, right? So you say, yeah. Oh, we had sex where we agreed to have it. Or we had sex where we mutually wanted it.
Yeah.
Wow, what a difference in those two statements,
well,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really, you know, and I hate to use the word empowering, but that's what it is. You suddenly add a very empowered place of being authentically in a situation with the other person, and it's mutually agreed to. It's, we're both fired up about this. And I know as a married guy myself, and you know, I know you're in the same space, that there are times when we may be like raring to go, and us as guys, we tend to just say, okay, we get this, we get to do this. And then our other halves are like, no, not necessarily, man, you know? And I think getting to, first of all, the age groups that you're starting with the college and university, and I love that now you're into the military and other areas where you're doing this, I think it's going to help us evolve as human beings to realize, wow, we can't just make the assumptions that we get to get this just because we want to get it, plain and simple.
Yes. Yeah. And what's amazing, so we work with all the way down to middle school. Last week, we were at a boarding school where we were with the middle school and then we were at the entire high school. Mm-hmm. And the discussions are so similar with a 12-year-old as they are with a 35-year-old. It really is amazing. And the one question you can ask any audience of any age, does every human being deserve a choice before somebody does something with their body, sexually or intimately, yes or no? Every audience gives the same answer. They're like, yes. How do you normally give somebody a choice before you do something with their body? Or how do you normally give somebody a choice in life, period? You ask A, and everybody yells, question.
Exactly.
How basic this is, what it comes down to is basic dignity and respect of my partner and myself. Am I giving them a choice? Am I giving myself a choice? Am I honoring the answer? You brought up a great example. You go to bed, you're horny. You want it. You ask your partner, are you in the mood? They say no. What do most people do at that point? Most people say, are you sure? Come on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been 2 nights. It's been a week. It's been 2 weeks.
Right.
They don't know to actually honor the answer and go, okay. Okay, thank you for letting me know. Yeah. Now, if I honor that answer, what are the odds my partner's going to feel more respected, more honored, and more attracted to me as a couple because we're honoring each other? Mm-hmm. You don't do it for that reason. You do it because it's the right thing to do. But there also is the benefit of we both respect each other, and that's sexy, and that's wonderful long term.
Well, I consider what you're doing a means of establishing sexual confidence. It's like being able to even ask the question and being able to, and I'm going to be a little gender specific in what I'm about to say, take it like a man, so to speak, and go, okay, not interested, okay. You begin to actually respect yourself and respect your partner, but there's something about being confident in that arena to go, I'm person enough. Now I'm going to switch back to, you know, gender neutral, person enough to ask the question. And that's where we start to build confidence, is when we can ask those kind of questions that we go into those murky, dark areas that some people go, really, you're going to ask those kind of questions? Wow. But that's where the confidence becomes. And then suddenly the more confident you are in that, I believe you're going to find other areas of your relationship that you can be really confident and go, you know what? I need to ask you about this because this has been something that I've been thinking on and I need to go here with you. And I do this work all the time with my gay guys and my gay couples because it's like they're afraid to ask the questions.
Yes. And I'm going to back up a little bit because I know you said, hey, Mike, I want to go gender specific here. You know, that idea of, hey, man up or take it like a man. And what's interesting in this conversation is how important it is that we're aware of what those statements do.
Yep.
Because what happens is, well, what does it mean for a woman to be confident then? Mm-hmm. Does she have to be a man to be sexually confident? Mm-hmm. So we always, when we're talking, we say to people, hey, when we say things like take it like a man or man up, what does that mean for the woman when she has her voice? Mm-hmm. Does she have to man up? Or is that part of being a woman to have a voice? So it provokes. And going into the confidence side of what you said, yes, here's the critical part. You say, why doesn't somebody ask for a kiss? And almost everybody will give you one of two reasons. One, it's going to ruin the moment and be awkward. Or two, afraid of rejection. So both your answers for why you don't ask were based in fear. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I'm going to ruin the moment. I'm afraid they're going to say no. The person who asks has so much confidence, they don't fear the answer. The person who just makes their move has so little confidence, they so fear the answer, they won't give their partner a choice. Mm-hmm. They just do it. I mean, it's so messed up when you think about it, right? And you ask audiences, hey, what takes more confidence, asking or going for it? And they're smart. People of all ages know what takes a lot more confidence to ask because you have to honor the answer. Yes, what do people love in a sexual partner more than anything? Confidence. Yeah. They love sexual confidence. So when you can use your words and say, may I kiss you? I've had an amazing time tonight. I would love to kiss you right now. May I kiss you? These are sexy moments. And if you're sitting there going, well, wouldn't it be sexy to me? You might want to look in the mirror and ask about your own sexual maturity level. Because mm-hmm. what you're saying when you say, I don't want to hear a conversation is, I can't handle the conversation. It'll ruin it for me. I don't want to hear it. It'll ruin it for me. Which is a deep-rooted issue of, why does talking about what you want to do sexually ruin it for you? That means something about that choice is uncomfortable for you to own.
Yeah.
By the way, there can be a lot of gender reasons.
There can be a lot of gender reasons, and there can be a lot of, you know, how you were raised in your own societal bubble of why those things are uncomfortable for you, you know?
And correct.
I know for me, as a guy who came out late in life, even though I came out early in life, I came out, you know, anybody who listens to this podcast knows I came out when I was 19. I went back in the closet, and then I came out later. But that journey was because I didn't have the confidence, and it had nothing to do with the sexual confidence. There was pieces of that, but I didn't have the confidence to be myself. I believe that when we step into these places where we find the things that we can ask and feel really secure about, this is where the confidence starts to show up. You and I are both in the speaking business, and we both know the confidence it takes to ask for the sell, to ask, do you want to hire me as a speaker? That's like a big confidence booster in and of itself. But if we start to look at this entire thing around relationships is, and some people may get turned off by what I'm about to say, it's all a sales job. Everything we do in life is a sales job of getting people to embrace us, to want to be a part of what we're in. But when we don't look at it as like, oh, I'm selling yucky stuff, we're selling the beauty of, hey, may I kiss you? That's like a beautiful sales offering of, you mean a lot to me, and I just took the moment to ask that question.
Yeah, and do you want to buy in on this experience? If you
exactly.
don't, that's, if you don't, that's okay. Right. But do you? And I want to know you want it, right? I don't want to sell you the car you don't want. I want to be the one you want. And we use that example. We're like, hey, you say to somebody, may I kiss you? And they go, I guess. How good is that intimacy going to be anyways? Mm-hmm. Versus you say to somebody, may I kiss you? And they're like, yes. Oh my gosh. Everybody's like, well, that's a turn on. If you're the one asking and they're like, yes, that is a massive turn on. And some people be like, F yes, you know, whatever. They'll use whatever language they want to use that they like and they've agreed they both are comfortable with. Some people call, well, that's too rude for me. Some people say, I like that kind of. That's your choice to pick the words and the language that work for the two of you, but it's sexy.
Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons I wanted you to come on the show, and everything so far is exactly what I was wanting to share, but I believe there's a lot of healing that needs to be done in my community, in the LGBTQ community, around being able to ask questions. Being able to ask someone, whether it's why you don't accept me as an LGBTQ person, or whether it's you're asking someone, would you like to have sex with me or kiss me? Because we've been, and I'm going general here, so I'm not saying this is everyone, but for the most part, many of us in the community have been shoved into a dark closet and said, you can't be this. So suddenly when you can't be this, then the sexual stuff begins to be the stuff you can't do either. And then it dominoes and it dominoes and it dominoes. And I felt like there's such a beautiful piece of this message that you bring forward that could begin to be a part of healing in my community. Many people who are in the closet hide their sexual energy, even down to the simplest thing as a kiss. And then they find themselves being thrust into a different closet of, okay, in order to do this, I'm going to have overboard sexual encounters, screw anything that shows up, and do it in, you know, dark alleys or whatever, because then nobody really knows. To me, this is the beginning. It could be a beginning of a platform. And Mike's probably going, I don't want my platform here, but I think you kind of do, because this is where it all starts. When we take away the shame of anything around sex being gross, dirty, wrong, whatever those labels are that we put on them, then people get freed to go, okay, this is powerful, not disempowering. And I'm wondering what you think about what I just said.
Yes, yes, and yes. One of the most powerful moments when I'm done on stage is when a student or someone in the audience of any age, and I've had people say this in their 50s and I've had people say this in their teens, that today was the first time I realized that I have the right to say yes or no without guilt. Mm-hmm. That is so healing and so important. This idea that if I say yes, there's something wrong with me for wanting to be sexual, so I feel guilty about that. This idea that if I say no, I'm a tease, or there's something wrong with me because I don't want to do that sexually. I'm frigid. All these titles get attached to me. Why can't I say yes and want that sexual activity? Why can't I say no and just know I don't want that and that's okay, I don't want that? And owning that voice is so important. And knowing that I have the right to be a sexual being if I want to be. And I have the right not to be a sexual being if I don't want to be. We have individuals who are asexual, mm-hmm. and they have the right to know that that's who they are and that's they can own that. And that's really important across all of the discussions that we're saying here. Yes, is that ownership. And it's so empowering to think I have the right to have a voice. What's sad is that when somebody's looking in the eyes going, I never thought I could have a voice before, mm-hmm. that our culture has done that. And as you said, our culture does that often because it likes to teach people you don't have the right to have a voice, or we reject you so much in so many areas of our culture that you start to wonder where there is any acceptance. And so how does that spill into my sexuality? How does that spill into my sexual decision making? Because I've never been allowed to exist freely. And yeah, this allows that, to have that voice and have this discussion.
One of the most empowering clients I ever got to work with, and I don't think I've talked about it on the podcast in quite a while, was a guy who, right after I became a coach, he started working with me. He was a gay man. He was already out, but he was really struggling with being himself. And he spent a lot of time going to the gay bathhouses in LA. And he was like, I really just want a real relationship. I'm like, okay, so what would it take to do that? He goes, well, I've got to stop going to the bathhouses. I'm like, okay, why do you have to stop doing this? Because that's just not what I need to be doing. So we kind of worked through it. And I knew what I was doing as far as coaching. I'm like, so then let's create a plan where you find a way to quit going to the bathhouses. So he came up with a plan and he felt pretty comfortable about it. And about 2 weeks later, he showed up for his session with me and he goes, I failed miserably. And I said, how so? He goes, I made it through the first week, thought I was going to make it through the second week. And then I finally just went. I said, okay, so let's try a different tactic here. What if you said to yourself, it's okay to go to the bathhouse? What if it's like the kid with the candy? It's the kid with the cookies that are fresh out of the oven that mom says, you can't have any cookies till after dinner. But what if instead you said, you can do this? You can give yourself permission to do this. He didn't know what to do with that because nobody had ever said to him, you can give yourself permission to go do this. It's okay. If you yes. say it's okay for you, that's all you need. And the miracle thing that came out of this, Mike, was 2 weeks later, he came to his session and he was like grinning ear to ear. I'm like, okay, something's up. What's going on, man? He goes, you gave me, I said, no, let's change the dialogue. I said, I didn't give you permission. You gave yourself permission. He goes, okay, I gave myself permission to say it was okay to go to the bathhouse. And so I did. Right after that session, I went. He goes, and then the next day I woke up and I said, I have permission to go do this. And he got really quiet and I said, and he said, and I didn't. I said, and why not? He goes, I had the permission, but that's all I needed was the permission to say it was okay to do that. And he goes, well, ironically, I met a guy the other night and not at the bathhouse. And it all came from him giving himself this permission to say, this is okay. And so in a weird way, this is where I think what you're doing is so beautiful, because when we give ourselves permissions to ask the question of what we would like to do with our partner, and we let them hear us say that, we've actually given ourselves permission to say, I am good enough to stand in my power and ask the right questions.
Yes. Yes, because when people don't have that, the other element of this that they often will turn to is alcohol or drugs to get them there.
Yep.
So now you have alcohol being used to engage in sexual intimacy, which really, on a big level, turns into sexual assault.
Yes.
But nobody has that discussion. They call them drunk hookups. Right. And what they're really describing is sexual assaults. Now we have sexual violence as a norm, as a way for sexual activity to take place, mm-hmm. which is really scary stuff. That's across our society we're seeing this. But if you had the sexual voice, you wouldn't need an ounce of alcohol. Because you'd know, hey, the alcohol numbs me. It actually, that's what it does. It numbs mm-hmm. me. So if it's numbing my nerves, the sex cannot be better. And if I think it is better when I'm drinking, that just tells me how bad the sex is.
Yes. Right? Exactly.
So if it feels better when you're numb, you're doing something wrong. Okay? So that idea. And when you realize, wait, when I can empower myself and give myself that gift, and the key word is to know I deserve that. I deserve mm-hmm. to have that voice. I deserve to have that choice. I don't need alcohol. I don't need any outside exact situation or person for this to happen, because I have all the power within me.
Yes.
I have all the voice within me.
You know, it's interesting to me that you use the word deserve, because I think a lot of people look at that word sometimes as it's a dirty word. Oh, I deserve this. And I use it all the time when I'm speaking on stage about coming out, that every person on the planet deserves to come out to be who they are, plain and simple. That's one of our human rights. We deserve to be who we are, but for whatever reasons, we're told we don't deserve to be that. And it doesn't have anything, you know, half the time when I'm speaking, it has nothing to do with my LGBTQ community. It has to be with empowering people to have the confidence to step out, to own their uniqueness in the world, and take a stand to say, this is me. But yet, people sometimes go, yeah, but I don't know, do I really deserve this? Well, if you love yourself enough, you do.
Yes, that's exactly it. The question is, You are a gift. Every one of us is a gift to this world.
Yep.
Every one of us. So that doesn't mean that you are above somebody else because you deserve it. And that's what people do. They think,
yes.
Well, doesn't deserve mean entitlement? Not if you believe everybody deserves. Does every human being deserve a basic level of dignity and respect? Yes. Even if I disagree with everything they believe in, they've been taught everything against what I believe in, they still deserve a basic level of dignity and respect. Yes. Do you deserve to be able to be who you are on this planet? Yes, because if you don't, why are you here, right? And we don't mean that as a way of if you're struggling, don't be here, obviously.
No.
We're saying the opposite. We're saying own your space.
Yes.
Own your energy in this world. That's why you're here. That's why you deserve it. It becomes so, so important. And part of this is a lack of people even understanding what the word communication means in the first place.
Mm-hmm. That's such a huge one.
You know, it's gigantic.
I mean, you and I could say, okay, we're communicating right now. And yes, I know we are. And I know we're actually doing a really good job of it. But we could both be saying what we want to say and going, okay, as soon as Rick's done, I'm going to say my thing. Then as soon as Mike's done, I'm going to say my thing. Then we're not communicating. We're not listening. We're not hearing. We're not taking in. And for those who are listening, I think most of you know that listen to this podcast, there is no script. We go, we dive right in. Right, Mike? We have just dove in here.
No preset questions.
Right,
Some shows give you those and say, here's what we're going to ask.
Yep.
Nope, it was just, hey, let's just get out and have a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is the thing where we get lost in communication sometimes is we don't listen. We don't hear. We don't pause. We don't give space. We don't let the quiet settle. We don't take in. We don't become the sponge.
Well, and what's interesting is that when it comes to sexual communication, what it turns out, when you say to somebody, oh, do you have sexual communication with your partner? Almost everybody says yes. But when you dive a little deeper, what you find out is they don't have communication. What they actually have is assumptions with no complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And they call that communication.
Mm-hmm.
And what they mean is, well, my partner's not complaining. So you're not actually asking them. So you don't give them a chance to say something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not complaining. Well, why are they not complaining? Have you ever told them that you want to hear if it's not good?
Yes.
You want to hear if you're doing something that they don't enjoy. Because they might not be complaining because they think it's going to hurt your feelings. And they don't want to hurt your feelings, which is very common.
Yep.
Which means they don't think you can handle the truth.
Right.
I mean, that's the irony. The first, they're not complaining. That's because they think you can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a partner never complains, then either they don't have a voice or they don't think you can handle it because there's no way you are both always doing exactly it the way the person wants it done. Life doesn't work that way. And if you are, after 10 years, they're going to want variety and they're going to want that changed. Maybe after 1 year, maybe after 1 week, there's going to be moments where it's not what that person wants. They should feel that they have a voice to say it to you, and you should have created an environment where they feel safe doing that. That's communication. I can say everything honestly, authentically, and you'll hear me and you'll understand me. You won't defend. You won't argue. And we've all been there. You were saying, you know, in your marriage and in my marriage, we've all made the mistake of not communicating because we're becoming defensive.
Yep.
But we got to catch those moments and catch them so that we can step back and go, okay, I handled that incorrectly.
Yep.
I did. And here's what I went wrong. And I apologize.
Well, I know for me, it was just in the last couple of weeks that at one point in time, when we were getting frisky in bed, I literally said to my husband, I don't need a story. Just let's just make love. I don't need the fantasy because sometimes I'm like, tell me a story, you know, and it almost took him aback because it's like, this is what I need. But we have developed this to the space where we know we can say these things, you know? And I think this is key critical that you can take something, and I'm not simplifying what you do, Mike, to simplify it. I'm saying four little words, can I kiss you, are as simple of communication as it can be, begin to build a platform of what real, true communication can look like in a relationship.
Yes. And being able to discuss, how do you like to be kissed?
Yes.
Where do you like to be kissed? How about the follow-up? What would you love for me to do in bed for you tonight?
Yes. It's all right, powerful stuff.
Yes. And fun, right?
Well, of course. Fun. Yeah. It's like, you know, people go, oh, yeah, and I hear this all the time, which is coming somewhat from a different space, but I hear it with a lot of clients that I've worked with that are coming out that, you know, they haven't had sex with their spouse in, you know, months or almost a year or... And, you know, there's a different space that's coming from because they're struggling with their sexuality. But I'm like, wow, what does it take to get to that space where that's the only intimacy that gets shared? It's this simple stuff of, you aren't communicating. You're not trusting yourself to go, okay, we can go here. We can be honest. We can be truthful. And it's really heartbreaking to me when I'm working with someone that's in that space to realize not only are they coming out, so they're dealing with that, but wow, what does this foundation look like that they think they're going to come out and everything's going to be really, really great, which there's going to be a lot of aspects that are going to be really great. But the foundation that's been built, and I often ask the question, based on your past relationship, if you took the sexual orientation out of the equation, what else was wrong? Because you need to start working on that too.
Yes, because this communication is what friendships and relationships are built on.
Yep.
And we all know that when there's stress in the friendship of the two, and when I say the friendship, I mean how they bond, how they talk, we know that's going to impact sexually. Yes. Because if you're walking into that bedroom with baggage in your head, especially as we get older, the baggage wins over the hormones.
Absolutely.
And when you're young, not so much, right? Everything's so new and exciting and things can just happen, right? People can just perform more quickly. But as you get older, the mind becomes more powerful, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome in so many ways and what that positively does for sex and sexuality. But at the same time, that also means it's going to drive stronger than the hormones will. Yeah. And it can control those hormones, obviously.
Obviously. Absolutely. All the time. And, you know, as a guy who's in his 50s, I'm like, wow, you know, you're constantly discovering this new stuff about, okay, what I thought could happen isn't happening. The boner's broken, you know, so let's figure this out, you know, and then the next day the boner's not broken. And of course, then it's not time and the mood's not right, you know, all these things. But I think this is just beautiful foundations that we can grow from. And that's, again, why I brought you here. And one of the questions I really wanted to ask you was, what have you learned most about yourself as you come through these doorways of starting to take this message out to the world?
Constant growth is that the learning never stops, I think, is a thing. You know, when you first learn this, when I was, you know, at the time I was 20, 21, when I first had this sort of epiphany from listening to the speaker, and I thought, oh, I got it now. And then at 25, another epiphany, and oh my gosh, how did I not get that? And now 46, and the epiphanies come even faster and more often of, oh, wow, that's really important. And constantly being open to that discovery and that learning about myself, about my partner, about the world, the energy we're putting out there on these topics. Mm-hmm. I think that it's an ongoing experience. And when we talk about consent, we say consent is ongoing. Yeah. So is your relationship and the building of it and the growth of it and the learning, the ongoing aspect, I think, is what continually hits me, you know, and says, whoa, here we go again, another learning moment, another moment of growth.
Yeah. I think if we don't realize we have the privilege, and I use this term a lot, we have the privilege to learn every day.
Yes.
To me, that is one of the greatest gifts of being alive. Every morning when I take, you know, quote, take that first breath, so to speak, and I realize I'm taking that morning breath, it's like I have the privilege to learn again today.
That's brilliant, Rick. I love that. I'm guessing that you like self-development, deep dive kind of books. Maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah.
But I do too, because I love things that make my mind think about where are we in this world? What am I for the world? What is the world for me? How am I being present in this moment? And why does that play important in relationships, right?
Yep.
How am I being present in this moment? Not getting ahead of myself, not living in the past. How am I present in this moment with my partner right now? Am I helping them be present? Mm-hmm. Is something in their life that's not allowing them to be present? Am I present to that to help them have that clearing?
You know, it's interesting that we're having this interview today because my husband and I have gone, as most couple do, we've gone through some roller coasters and we, you know, your relationship moves. And so in the last couple of months, we've really been putting a lot more attention back into us. When I'm out on the road, there's like, okay, you really got to put the work on it. But when you're home, sometimes you can forget to put the work in it too. And so we've been paying a whole lot more attention and making sure we say good night and good morning and, you know, morning kisses and all that sort of stuff. And then over the weekend, I got strep throat. And so, of course, I was wearing the mask part of the day and then all that stuff. And then, you know, today when he left, I happened to be up and he kind of leaned in and I just kind of, you know, leaned in and kissed him on the back of the neck because I'm like, I know I'm not contagious, but I want to make sure. And it wasn't until you were just talking that I'm like, I didn't realize how much I've actually been missing his kisses because I've been sick. But it's that moment when you really start to see these things that, you know, I just said it's a privilege to learn each and every day. I realized how much I learned, how much I missed his kiss in this moment.
Yes. And I've been, similar thing, when you're home, you know how it works. If I'm only home for 3 days and I'm on the road for another seven, and I or Karen are sick, and same thing, right? You don't want to get each other sick.
Right.
Oh, I hate the fact we can't just kiss.
Yep.
Right, which people want to think, well, does it kill your sex life? You know, those kind of conversations.
Right, right, right.
You know, the part that really drives you nuts is the kiss, because the kiss can happen multiple times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you're missing it each time.
Yeah,
you're missing it every time. And so that is it. You know, or when you get on that airport, they just dropped you off at the airport. You're 5 minutes into the airport and you're thinking, I already missed them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to be away a day. It could be minutes sometimes and I miss that person.
Yeah.
That's the presence, right? Being present to what you're feeling right now at that moment.
So, Mike, man, this flies by, but before we wrap up, I always have one question I ask every guest that comes on, and relate it to however you want to relate it. You know, everybody that listens to this show for different reasons. Most people are coming out of closets about sexuality, but we've expanded this thing and we're having lots of beautiful conversations like you and I had today where we're reaching to wider audiences. If you could leave some tidbit for someone who's struggling with coming out to be who they are, you know, helping them come out of that closet and say, here I am. What would you say to them?
I would love for them to just sit down and write a letter about all of their most amazing qualities and presence about them, as if it was somebody writing it to them, but it's themselves.
Mm.
So, Rick, here's what I observe about you. And then just share what you know are your greatest gifts. And you're going, oh, I can't think. Really think about, what do people say when they love being around you? Whether it's work, it's family, it's friends, it's spiritually, it's athletically, it's whatever, if it's sexually, it's whatever you want. And every example you can give, write that out and just read that and soak in.
Mm-hmm.
This is me. This is me. And I belong here. And the world deserves to know who I am.
Yes. Yeah, so powerful. You know, I went to Oprah's tour last time she was out doing the tour. And one of the things she did during the Oprah weekend was she had us write down what we wanted for someone. We picked somebody, could have been a spouse, a kid, a friend, whoever. Write down what we want for them. And it was her and Deepak Chopra on the stage when they did this. And so we take 5 minutes or so, they stopped. And it was pretty amazing to be in an arena of like 10,000 people and you're all doing this together. So that energy alone was like just over the top. And then Oprah, in her Oprah way, said, so you just did something really beautiful for that person. But in reality, if you look at what you just wrote, this is what you wish for yourself. And you could almost hear the collective gasp throughout the arena and the chills. Because that's exactly, I didn't hear one person say, no, I don't want that for myself. In fact, if I looked at my list, it was like, holy crap, yes, this is exactly what I desire for myself. And what you just did was a very similar thing in, you know, give yourself permission to say, this is who I am. This is why I deserve to be on the planet. This is what I've been put here to do that nobody else can do. And you, my friend, have definitely been put on the planet to do what you're doing in such a beautiful way, man. I'm proud to know that I know this guy on the other end of the microphone. So thank you for being with us here today, Mike.
Thank you, Rick, for this. This is an awesome conversation. And I love the way you share and you're so open and vulnerable and allows people to be real. It's so important.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, definitely. As for me, I'm off tonight to a university campus where we're doing our shows, and then I'm off to another university campus. And
wow, that's awesome.
Military events coming up. So typically for me, Monday through Thursday, I'm in a different location each day, and then I get my weekends at home with my family.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, safe travels, buddy, and thanks for doing what you're doing for the world. All of Mike's contact information will be on the show page, everyone knows, and we can't wait for you to just dive in and grab a copy of his book, Can I Kiss You? It'll be there where you can link right over to it and get it. Read it, share it with people you think might benefit from it. And again, thanks, Mike, so much for being here today.
Thank you, Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and coming out lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey,
Be more content in who you are and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors. Would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new coming out coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.